Hello, Beat Check listeners. I'm Gosia Woźniacka, and I'm the environmental justice reporter at The Oregonian. Many homeowners in Oregon are feeling the impact of higher electricity bills, and they're facing the prospect of yet another rate increase next year. And as electricity bills have skyrocketed, these rate increases have caused a lot of anger and frustration in our communities. And they've led many people to question how and why utilities recoup money from their customers. Now, a few weeks ago on this podcast, we hosted Bob Jenks with Oregon Citizens Utility Board, a nonprofit that advocates for utility customers. And today on our show, we have Dane Nestle, Director of Customer Solutions at Portland General Electric. And we're going to be talking about the reasons for these steep rate increases, why they're necessary from PGE's perspective, and how the company is trying to rein in costs and help its customers in an era of increasing electricity demand, extreme weather, and aging infrastructure. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Dane. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
So PGE has had several substantial rate increases in recent years, back to back. And that's after an era of sort of minor rate increases in the past. And so rates went up 12% in January 2023, 18% this January, and then PGE has just proposed another 7% increase that would go into effect next January. And altogether, that's about 40%, give or take, since rates compound year to year. Many people are really struggling with these increases. I've heard from many customers, you know, who email or call the Oregonian. You know, people are really frustrated. Their cost of living has also gone up. Salaries have not. PGE and Pacific Power are both investor-owned utilities, and they're monopolies, so people can't choose another utility if they wish to. They are kind of stuck with what they have. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about why rates are going up so much and why PGE has just asked for yet another increase just 2 months after rates went up 18%.
You know, there's been a number of changes that we've had to navigate over the last number of years. Number one is inflation. So we have fuel costs that go into our generation, that goes into the product that we supply our customers. And the costs of that fuel has gone up substantially over the last couple of years, and that's a significant input into the driver for these rate reviews. You know, our costs are directly correlated to what customers are seeing on their bills. We also have seen some other changes that we need to make sure that we're being proactive, and that's for wildfire mitigation. So call that vegetation management, getting out there and making sure that where we have our power lines, transmission, and distribution, that we've got lots of space between those and trees, because we want to make sure that if a tree falls on a power line, it's less likely to be an ignition. Also investments on those lines to make sure that where they're covered is appropriate. So if a tree falls on it, we're also investing, frankly, in our future. We're investing to make sure that we have a more resilient system in terms of the infrastructure that's out there, the poles and the wires, but also a cleaner energy future for all of the folks that we serve. So we're investing in renewable resources, we're investing in storage, we're investing in just a holistic approach, but also doing so in a way that's prudent and sequenced, which is why you don't see a huge spike all at once for a huge increase. We're trying to sequence it so that it's the right investment at the right time for the goals that we have, which is to provide safe, reliable, and affordable energy to all of our customers.
When people talk to me or email me, you know, the question many people ask is, are these increases fair to customers? And why should these investments and repair costs be borne by customers and not by the company itself and its shareholders? You know, folks who contact me, they're often really upset that PGE's CEO just got a raise, that PGE is doing well as a company, its shareholders are making money, you know, and compare that to customers who really are struggling with their bills. And so there's a sense of like, this isn't fair. This is kind of the frustration that's out there. You know, why should PGE be sort of gaining in wealth and customers buckling under the weight of higher rates? And so I'm wondering if you can address this issue of how much customers should pay for these investments and how much the company and its shareholders should. Why should customers have to pay and not the investors, and the sense of fairness, if you could address these issues?
We understand that customers they're feeling and observing different issues as it relates to the rate increases in PGE's performance as they see it. And we're very mindful of that. We're very cognizant of the impact of every rate increase that we propose. We're also supportive of the public process that allows our customers to directly engage in that process, to make sure that their voice is heard, that we have stakeholders like Bob Jenks and Cub weighing in and providing their perspectives so that the outcome that comes from the rate increase is a fair and equitable one and everybody's been heard. So we appreciate that that process exists. We also look at how we can be the most judicious in how we're acquiring capital so we can make investments in the system, so we actually don't have bigger rate increases down the road. We want to make sure that we are being very competitive in how we're getting resources, how we're getting capital, so we can go out there and make the smart resources that, frankly, make it more efficient to operate our system going forward.
But I guess if you can still address this issue of, like, how much should customers pay for it versus how much should the company? Like, why should customers pay for it all?
So it's
and I'm not saying that's the case, but I think that's the feeling out there, that customers are paying for it all and the company isn't.
You know, let's be clear, the customers aren't paying for it all. They're paying for a portion of how we run the company. By and large, it's an operation and maintenance piece that we're asking the customers to help us with. And there's just some inputs that we have to make sure that we're covering the costs for. So you'll hear in different venues, you know, it's cost recovery. That's what we're asking our customers to help us with. It's not the, you know, big, expensive, whatever that shiny object is. That's not what we're asking the customers to help us with. It's what is that cost recovery? What is that prudent investment, that sequenced investment? That's what we're asking the customers to help us with, are those costs.
And you mentioned customers being able to get involved in the conversation around rate setting. You mean through the Public Utility Commission?
Yeah, through the Oregon Public Utility Commission. There's a public process so that as we file a rate increase, or even if we have other filings, there's a public process for stakeholders and our customers to engage and to, at the very least, to be informed in terms of what others are saying, but also have their voice heard as well.
And I'll link to that in the show notes. I think many people are not aware of that process. And it's also, let's be frank, an extremely complicated bureaucratic process that is very difficult to understand. But there is a venue for people to voice their opinions beyond actually calling PGE or whatever
sure.
other power company they're. So, yeah, glad you mentioned that. So our regulations in Oregon allow investor-owned utilities like PGE to make a profit. Obviously, you're a company out to make a profit, so that makes sense. And the way that PGE can do that is by building more infrastructure. And so this means that utilities like PGE kind of have an incentive to spend money on building. And so I'm wondering how your company is acting as a financially conservative actor to sort of rein in some of that you know, incentive to build and to actually save money for customers, to say, like, well, maybe we're not going to build that right now because we can wait. It's going to cost a lot of money. Like, what are the conversations, or what are the arguments around building more stuff? You know, whether it is upgrading power poles or transmission, or, you know, investing in new clean energy, battery or solar or wind. Like, what's the process of deciding how much is actually needed at the moment versus what can wait?
That's a calculus we're running every day. We're making the decisions based off of the benefits to customers so that where we are applying that capital and that investment, that it's going to have the right outcome for customers, whether it be for reliability, whether it be for the system that we're investing in so we can get to our clean energy targets, the 2030 targets that we have in House Bill 2021. And we're also making sure that that's the right investment for a more efficient system. So you said savings, right? We do a significant investment in software. So we're not just sending people out to the field. We better understand how we can manage the system and learn the system more efficiently. So one example is we have a system that we just recently deployed that is able to see when there is an outage and then automatically switch the flowing of power around it and restore power to 90% of those customers within 3 minutes without us having to roll a truck. As we more broadly deploy that, not all at once, we're doing it in a very judicious fashion so we can make sure that we're sequencing into that investment on behalf of all customers. We're actually going to see operational savings, you know, day in, day out. We also have other investments that we made in terms of how we are operating our call center. So that's as efficient as possible. We have that system actually helped us with call center quality. So we're providing the right information at the right time. And instead of having people standing by and listening to calls, this system is using, basically machine learning to listen to the calls automatically. Tell us what the themes are. Tell us what we should be thinking about. Tell us the information that we should proactively gather to provide that to our customers. And that means that we don't have as many people here doing that quality assessment. And we're providing that insight for customers when they call in.
Got it. And it sounds like those are fairly recent investments. Like people wouldn't have seen the outage one during the January storm on a
That was a fairly recent one. And it's one where we go through a process of careful evaluation of what those different technologies might be or what the system changes might be. So it is a recent one. And we're also making sure that we're putting it on the feeders. Feeders are the lines that get energy to people's houses that would benefit from it the most. So we're not going and doing it to the entire service territory. We're going to the feeders where we think we can get the most benefit for the dollar that's invested.
Switching gears a little bit. So transition to clean energy. We mentioned that earlier. Just as a reminder to our listeners. So Oregon law requires investor-owned utilities like PGE to reduce their carbon emissions by 80% by 2030 and 100% by 2040. And so this means getting rid of coal and natural gas and relying 100% on clean, renewable energy by 2040. That's a pretty tall order. And then add on to that the additional generation that will be needed when everybody goes electric, so drives electric vehicles, heats their homes using electricity, which is also something that the government, state and federal, is pushing very hard. Can you talk about how PGE will meet both of those clean energy mandates and the additional loads, and how much this transition to clean energy and all electric is going to cost customers? Does this transition directly translate into higher rates?
Yeah, so in terms of our view of the targets you laid out, 80% by 2030 and 100% by 2040, we see this as a unique opportunity to invest in Oregon in our clean energy future. You know that emissions that are going into the air and frankly into our environment, it's not good for any of us and is impacted and resulting in climate change. And we've seen a difference in how our summers and our winters, you know, how weather events are different in the last number of years than how they've been in the past. And so we understand that this is the right investment in Oregon. In terms of the resources and getting there, you know, from a cost perspective, our Boardman plant, I appreciate that Bob Jenks and Cub suggested that it would be more cost effective and would save customers $200 million by shutting down Boardman. And coal right now is very expensive. So that is getting out of that fossil fuel is a direct savings to customers. Getting out of natural gas in as much as is feasible is also a savings because that fuel is so volatile in the market. And renewables, actually renewable resources, whether it be wind or solar, are actually the cheapest form of energy generation right now. And then we have a new wind facility in Montana that is actually serving to reduce cost pressures for customers. The last piece that I'll say is on a renewables piece, you know, there is no fuel cost. You know, the water that runs through hydro, the wind through the wind farms and the sun, that is a zero fuel cost for us. And that's a savings that is passed on through to customers. So we appreciate the opportunity to sequence into those resources and make sure that we're doing it reliably. Now, you talked about electrification. There is a lot of electrification that's happening in the market as is. We are a top three market for electric vehicle adoption. We have a lot of electrification. People are switching to heat pumps. And in as much as you could look at that through the lens of that's driving up load or a peak, that's actually part of the solution for us. Heat pumps are a very efficient technology compared to the replacement of, you know, baseboard heaters. EVs also have the ability to enroll in our program. We've got a program with thousands of EVs in it that manages the charging. So it's not charging at the same time everybody else is, it's charging before or after. So we're actually able to smooth the load on the system and manage within the infrastructure we have.
So, I mean, what you're saying is that clean energy oftentimes is the cheapest energy source, but we have to build those clean energy projects. So we have to build those wind projects, solar projects, battery projects, offshore wind projects, et cetera. And that's going to cost money. I mean, can you talk about who is responsible for building these projects? Because oftentimes it is private developers, but sometimes it is PGE actually building and investing in them. And just the sheer cost of it, because, I mean, we need massive, massive amounts of energy and massive amounts of these clean energy projects still to be built, you know, in order for us to get that cheaper energy.
So there's a couple components in here that I think we should be careful of. So when we're looking at these projects, let's call them, you know, the renewable projects and new renewable projects, yes, they are significant in size. And what we do is you go through an RFP, a procurement process that goes out there and seeks the most competitive offer. And we're looking at flexible timelines so we can get the least cost, most reliable, renewable resource onto the system. And so we're looking at that. We're making sure that we are being as very fair in that entire process so that we're making sure that the investment to customers pays off. And when I say pays off, so that we can replicate what happened with that Montana wind project, where we have net decrease or downward pressure on customer prices over time. We're also looking at, you know, what else can we do for customer programs that help in the interim? So I talked about the EV program. We have programs also that help us move into those renewable timelines so that customers can have more control over their energy as we're bringing more renewables online. And then we find ourselves in a point where we are past 2030 and we're on track to hit our 2040 goals.
And can you clarify whether PGE actually builds any of those projects or is it pretty much all private developers? Because PGE does have some of its own projects that you're maintaining. And
Yeah, we have some projects or some, I'll call them generation resources that we own. There are some that we co-develop with others. And there are some where it might be, frankly, just more economical for a developer to build it. And we get the offtake, we get the power from it over time. And so we wouldn't have some additional cost of the infrastructure. So we look at, of those different options, which is most cost effective for us for the useful life of that resource. And when I say us also, I want to be clear that it's not the PGE us, it's not the corporate PGE. We're thinking in terms of us, the customer, and those that are helping to invest in those resources. So it's the broader us.
Now, given how massive the infrastructure needs are in terms of what we need to add, and the fact that some of this technology is still being developed, so we don't have any offshore wind at this point. We have very little battery storage to speak of. You know, during the most recent storm, we got almost no power from wind and solar. Can you talk about whether these goals are realistic? I mean, we talk about going, you know, all renewables, but right now we don't have access to wind and solar during these extreme weather events when we really, really need our energy. How do we solve that?
So these goals are realistic, but we should open the aperture in terms of the resources we're talking about here. When we're thinking about renewables, and you mentioned solar and wind, you know, there's a diversification strategy that we're deploying to our portfolio of generation resources. So if the wind isn't blowing in the gorge, it's likely blowing in Montana. You know, if the sun isn't shining in Oregon, it is definitely shining somewhere in California. And so there's a there's ways for us to leverage those resources too. We're also connected to a West Coast market for energy. So even though there might be a scenario where we didn't get solar or wind during that, you know, during a time frame, we're part of that market. So we're serving all customers, regardless of the different events that we're navigating. So as we look at it, and I also left off hydroelectricity. We have dams on the Columbia River and also on the system. And that provides yet another layer of diversity for how we serve our customers, regardless of the event that they're in. And we are very planful in terms of the load that we see coming. Then how do we line up those resources to ensure that we have the least cost resources on the system that allow us to hit our clean energy targets and serve all customers at the same time?
I wanted to you to address sort of two questions that customers often bring related to what we just discussed. One is, you know, you mentioned that renewables are the low-cost alternatives. But as we're seeing more and more renewables come into the system, we're seeing some of the highest rate increases. Why is this? Are the two directly related or not? Because I think in the minds of customers, you know, they're seeing the two together, you know, more renewables and higher rates. So how is it possible that, you know, renewables are supposedly so cheap and yet we're not seeing our rates go down?
Yeah, so let's think about maybe the timeline of the recent rate increases that we talked about earlier. You know, a lot of that is driven by fuel prices for those non-renewable resources. A lot of that is driven by the wildfire mitigation we have to put in place, the veg management. And then we do have to go out there and stand up and, you know, put those additional renewable resources on the system. There's a cost of that. There's also investments that are required for battery infrastructure so that we can actually manage that intermittency from some of those renewable resources from solar and wind. So that takes additional investment. So in as much as we're deploying an all the above strategy, you know, prudency always, we also have to make sure that we're looking forward to what are the right investments to make at the right time. And that in some cases is going to result in a rate increase or a rate review similar to the one that we just filed. So we're looking forward and making investments for the next 15, 20, 30 years. And so sometimes as we step into that and what that portfolio looks like, we're going to see some increases at different times along that path.
So when you talk about renewables being less expensive, is the idea that eventually once we make all these investments and once we wean ourselves off of natural gas, eventually the rates will go down or will be steady because these renewables are so cheap?
Yeah, what we seek is stable rates for our customers, something that they can plan around. And we're thinking about strategically, how do we do that to leverage the most competitive process available to us so we're getting the least cost, highest reliability resources. But we also can't predict the future. We have, you know, a recent spate of inflation that's impacted us in terms of our operations. And so where we seek to get to stable pricing, there are likely going to be times when we have different inputs that we need to manage. And so there might be another rate increase. So we seek for stability, but we also know that the future is unpredictable. We have to be ready and to address that when it comes.
So it's kind of hard to tell. Another sort of way to ask about this clean energy transition, you know, I think I would say many Oregonians are, you know, stand behind this transition. They want to decrease their fossil fuel use. They want to decrease their emissions and carbon footprint. But there are many people also who are very fearful of this transition, or, you know, they're afraid that, you know, they might not have access to the infrastructure, or it's going to cost them more. And people are sort of feeling like they've been sold a bill of goods, at least some are, you know, that everybody is pushing for replacing dirty fuels with clean energy. And then also pushing for more reliance on electricity, which will give PGE more market share. And then at the same time, PGE is raising rates because it needs to pay for those investments. And so customers are kind of feeling like, you know, we're pushing all these new policies, all these new mandates, and in turn, that's going to cost us more. Like, why are we going in that direction? I feel like a lot of readers are in that boat, and they're like, why are we even doing this if it's going to drive our rates up?
So you mentioned market share, and I want to start there. You know, we have a market that is designated by the Oregon Public Utilities Commission, and so we're not focused on market share. That is assigned to us, and our job here is to make sure that we're managing on behalf of all of our customers that reliable, safe, affordable energy, and what is that transition to get us to clean. And we totally understand that customers have different opinions of, you know, what it means for PGE to go clean. What's their role in that? What's interesting is we have the most successful voluntary renewables program for residential customers in the country. It's been the most popular program for 13 years running now. So to your earlier point, that some customers are very supportive of it. We actually see that in our program participation for those that are in the program and stay in the program. But we also know that we've got to continue to help people understand, you know, what that journey looks like, what that investment in a lower cost operating wind farm, how that pays off for them, and what that means in terms of the transition. And that where some might equate it to some rate increases, a theme we're talking about here, what we're seeing is over time, how do we see the net benefits come back to rates and come back to customers and create more resilience? Now, on resilience, I mentioned batteries before. The investments that we're talking about batteries now, not just help us when maybe there's less sun or less wind. It helps us when maybe there's abundance of sun coming from California, and then maybe we have some other interruption. Maybe a car's hit a pole, or maybe there's some system outage. That resilience online helps us to fill in that gap for those different types of scenarios that we're thinking about planning for on a regular basis. So we understand, but at the same time, we actually have a number of customers who are totally comfortable with this. And frankly, they're telling us to go do more. So for us, it's a balance. How do we move to our 2030, 2040 targets in a way that is as equitable as possible for all customers? And if they choose to do more, we support that. And if they are happy with us leading the way, we're happy to do that as well.
So what you're saying is that there are benefits even beyond those state climate mandates, that basically some of these investments are making the system stronger and better to withstand all these extreme weather events or other problems that may crop up in the future. So customers are benefiting.
Yeah, you know, little piece of nuance in there too is, you know, we're talking about sort of these larger events, whether it be a storm and that resilience. There are other events that happen on a day in, day out operational basis that investments like batteries can help us with. We know that when animals get into some of our equipment, that can be pretty significant and cause an outage, and that battery can be there and it can jump in and then provide electricity for that customer until such time as we have that repair. So from a broader infrastructure basis, but also from an individual customer impact, these investments help to make sure that we have continuity with our electricity that we're providing, and they've got more confidence in being able to electrify and grow into that clean energy future.
One other thing I want you to address is the impact of climate change on your system. So you mentioned wildfire mitigation, and cutting vegetation. So wildfires are not sparked by equipment. Pacific Power, another Oregon electric utility, recently filed a rate case in which it's seeking approval for an insurance cost adjustment and a catastrophic fire fund to help address the risk of exposure from wildfires. And PGE has not proposed a similar mechanism, but your utility has indicated that it's going to seek some kind of a process to identify and explore options, including sources of funding on this wildfire mitigation issues. Can you talk about why customers should bear the risk of utility-caused wildfires, why they should bear the damages awarded to wildfire victims? And to be clear, PGE is not involved in any lawsuits at this point. But, you know, this is kind of something that utilities across the West are dealing with. Wildfires are here to stay. And clearly, PGE is thinking about some sort of mechanism to recover money in the future if these issues crop up. So I'm just wondering, again, if you could address this issue of, like, why customers should pay for this.
I've lived in Oregon for more than 25 years, and I recall probably 20 years ago when it would be occasionally we would have smoke in the area, in the air, and we would think, oh, there's a wildfire, you know, close by. This is unfortunate. This sucks. I can't go running or whatever today. And now that's happening multiple times a summer, whether it's fires in Canada, whether it's people on the East Coast now understanding what it's like to live in the summertime with smoke. But we've been managing it, to your earlier point, in the West for the better part of 10 years now. But those fires have gotten more severe. The summers have gotten drier. We're actually seeing less precipitation in the summertime than we had previously. We can all look out, go to the gorge, and see different trees or vegetation that, frankly, is dead from just it being too hot for them. So our approach is to be proactive in mitigating the risk of wildfires, to make sure that we're thinking about where is the highest risk, how do we get out there and take our resources and mitigate that risk as much as possible, then make the right investment so if there is something that happens, we can respond very quickly. And an example of that is in different areas, we've deployed what we call panel cameras. And they have a broad lens, high-definition cameras that are connected to artificial intelligence. And so it's continuously scanning for ignitions and sparks. And when it sees that, it sends an automatic alert to the fire agencies and us so that we can make sure that the resources are deployed. So our focus right now is one to understand the risk and prudently identify how we can help to mitigate that risk, both proactively in vegetation management, but also what are those systems that get the right resources to respond as quickly as possible. So that's really where we're focused. But we also understand that, you know, it's gonna be a delicate issue to navigate as we move forward. So we're trying to make sure that we're doing the right thing for all customers with the situation we're in now.
And again, why should customers be paying for this?
Well, that's part of the operational costs that we have for maintaining a reliable system. And so We're making sure that we're getting the cost recovery of going out there and reducing the risk of wildfires and reducing the impact on those communities. I myself have been through a fire, and you don't get to go back and recover that property, that personal belongings that are gone. And we understand that it's a binary scenario. And we've also seen what happened a couple of years ago, how impactful those fires are. So we're asking customers to cover our cost and mitigating that risk as we go forward.
Another issue with climate change is, you know, winter storms. And we've just been through a storm in January that, you know, was a pretty extreme storm, lots and lots of outages. And I'm wondering, you know, PGE said it spent about $30 million on outage repair for that January storm, which it's going to ask to recover those costs from customers. Can you tell me how PGE prepares for these winter storms? Are you replacing old equipment, trimming more trees, burying more power lines? You know, I know burying power lines is expensive, and also it's not storm-proof 100%. So I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about, you know, how PGE prepares ahead of time for these, as opposed to just the response while it's happening.
Yeah, so on a regular basis, we're looking at the system that we have out there. And when I say system, I'm talking about the poles and the wires. We call that the distribution system. So we're evaluating different parts of the distribution system all the time and identifying where we frankly have risks for if there's going to be wind or additional weight that's on those poles or those wires. And we're making proactive investments to upgrade those and get that aging equipment out there and get updated equipment in there. So we're actually hardening the system. We do that across our service territory on a regular basis to make sure we're making the right investments at the right time. During that January storm that you mentioned, we actually saw a dividend there in the St. John's area. We had done what I just talked about. We identified some old equipment, went through the process of hardening it and, you know, making sure that old equipment is out, better equipment's put in, and they sustained far less damage than other areas that sustained damage during that January storm. The other piece that we're doing is we're making sure that we're better modeling where we expect to see impacts from the weather. We're making sure that we have the right resources in place to go help with restoration as needed. We have our utilities that are in the neighboring areas on standby for mutual aid in case we need to bring them in. We actually had 190 crews on a day-in, day-out basis out there making restorations. And we're also making sure that we're investing in training so we have a strong workforce to scale up and meet the needs of our customers when that happens. So for us, it's making sure that we're well-trained, that we're making the right investments. They frankly have a more resilient system when these kinds of events come through. And you know, they are significant and they are impactful, and we understand that, which is why we want to get the restorations done as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sounds like it's a matter of preparing ahead of time. In terms of the burying the power lines, I know when I talked to PG after the storm, you know, they mentioned that both the regular power lines and the buried power lines were impacted by the storm. I'm wondering if you know what percentage of the buried power lines were impacted versus regular power lines. Like, were the impacts the same?
I don't know the exact percentage, but I can tell you that, you know, we had hundreds, if not more, you know, old growth trees in the southwest Portland or area of Portland come down onto poles. And so there's a big impact when you do have those, you know, above ground poles and wires, but that's actually the most efficient way for the majority of our service territory to provide energy to our customers. Undergrounding is expensive, and frankly, it doesn't make the most sense everywhere. And so we're doing the evaluation. As I said, you know, where do we make those hardening investments? We're doing the evaluation to figure out where should we underground in addition to where we are now. So that we're not going after something that's going to even create more cost pressure for customers. We're making the smart investments at the right time.
Right, because if you do bury a lot more power lines, that would be a cost that customers would have to help pay for.
Well, there's two pieces, right? So it would be billions of dollars, billions and billions of dollars to fund it. And then the disruption for our communities where we're undergrounding all those lines, you know, the tearing up of sidewalks and gardens and all the crews that are on the roadways and the time it would take. I mean, it would take years upon years upon years to do that. And so for us, it seems like a concept that we should be leaning into, but we have to be smart about that investment. We have to be thinking about the impacts to customers and how quickly can we get power restored with the system that we have now. That's where we're trying to be smart.
Got it. Makes sense. One last thing I want to address, which is a pretty important one in terms of climate impacts, is the increase in usage and also efficiency in use. So, you know, during the January storm, even though people had outages for a few days, people saw really, really high bills. You know, this was coupled. So we had this really cold snap, you know, with the 18% increase. And so people saw really hundreds and hundreds of dollars on their bills. And I think a lot of people were surprised. And, you know, the rate increase had played a role in that, but also the fact that it was very cold played a role. And so I'm wondering if, you know, is PGE seeing significant increases in usage, both during extreme weather events, so be it, you know, winter storms or winter freezes, and then also summer months. And then outside of that, are you seeing increases in usage? And what is PGE doing about that? You know, how are you trying to help customers become more efficient with their energy use?
Yeah, so we're seeing over time increases in usage just because there is low growth in our service territory. And by low growth, I mean that's the energy that customers are consuming, both on the commercial and industrial level, but also on the residential level and, you know, just all in between. There's a lot of benefit to customers for using electricity because, as you mentioned, it is more efficient sometimes for their processes. But also, if you switch from a baseboard heater in your home to a heat pump, that's a far more efficient technology that net on net, year over year, saves more money than if you continued using that baseboard heat. So we do see more usage. Our approach to helping manage that is to make sure that we've got programs that are available to customers. I mentioned IQBD earlier, but we have demand response programs. So if you're a multifamily apartment person, you can sign up for a peak time rebate and you're compensated for using energy when we have peak times. I mentioned the program for EVs, but we also have a smart thermostat program, which helps us to manage those peaks for the winter and the summertime, because we are now a dual peaking utility, which means we have a peak in the summer and we have a peak in the winter because of the energy usage. And for us, we want to manage those peaks while helping people on their electrification journeys. So we have programs that are available to customers. In addition, we have a program called Energy Tracker, which helps customers identify and understand their energy usage where they can make choices on their own. But we also have in Oregon, the Energy Trust of Oregon, and their sole purpose is to sponsor energy efficiency programs and measures for all customers of all types, for new construction, for existing buildings. And so that's a critical resource for customers as well. There's incentives and there's rebates out there. We partner with the Energy Trust. It's a great solution for customers. In fact, Energy Trust has been around for decades, and Oregon is a leader in terms of energy efficiency. And now with the Inflation Reduction Act incentives, there's no better time than now to invest in energy efficiency.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm wondering, you know, thinking of the lower income customers that are customers of PGE, many people tend to live in homes that are not well insulated. They have baseboard heating, resistance heating that is very inefficient. When they're hit with these extreme weather events, they are paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars, or they're forced to, you know, keep their thermostat at 55 or 60 because they just can't afford to pay that much money. And many of them are also renters. And so I'm wondering, for people in those situations, we're not talking about, you know, people who are middle class who can afford to pay a little more or have sort of better systems for heating in their homes, but people who are really, you know, sort of at the bottom of the income scale and they don't have insulation and they don't have efficient heaters. They have baseboard heaters. They have, you know, leaky windows, they're renting. Like, what can they do?
So the first thing that I would say is give us a call. We have a program called Income Qualified Bill Discount. And we evaluate people's incomes based off of the median income in Oregon and their household. And if they qualify, they can get up to a 60% bill discount on their bill from PGE. So we're here to help for those people that are in that scenario. We know that that's a challenge for those folks that are in those types of apartments. And I've lived in them myself. I understand what that looks like. So we want to help there. We're also working with the Energy Trust to identify how we can get more of those federal dollars deployed out into those multifamily dwellings and premises to make some of those upgrades, those energy efficiency upgrades. So you're replacing the windows, you're doing air sealing so that there is insulation that's going in there, because that's better for everybody. It creates a healthier environment. It's better for everybody's pocketbook. And frankly, it's just a more comfortable place to live in. And so we're seeing how we can remove some of those barriers right now.
Thank you. And you mentioned your bill discount program, which is paid by customers, by ratepayers. Can you tell me what percentage of PG customers are currently using that discount program, and also what's the average discount?
So I can tell you that it was a 25% discount previously, and after our last rate case, it's shifted to 60% discount for qualified customers, and that is mostly funded through our commercial and industrial customers. So we're trying to make sure that the distribution is fair and applied there. We have 60,000 customers on the program now. We expect to have 120,000 in probably, I believe, by the end of the year or soon thereafter.
Got it. And how many total residential customers does PGE have?
We have about 800, well, so we have 900,000 plus meters and 2 million customers. And so if you look at it on a meter basis, we have about 880,000 meters and about 1.9 million residential customers.
Got it. Thank you. Is there anything else you want to add? I think those are all my questions. Anything else you'd like to add in terms of impacts or what PGE is doing to mitigate them?
One, thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. It's great to hear the questions and provide, you know, perspectives that we're thinking about all day, but also encourage the folks that are listening to the podcast to go to our website, explore the different programs and tools that we have. Let us know how we can help. We are listening to customers, you know, who have all sorts of opinions. And if there's a program that you'd like us to see, we'll take a look at it and see if we can get that going. So come see what tools we have available for the customers.
Dane, this has been really an important conversation, and I appreciate having you on the show. We'll be following this topic closely in future stories in the Oregonian and online at OregonLive.com. And I'll drop a few links, as I mentioned, into the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this one is with a subscription to Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time, thank you.